Great mojo comes great responsibility. Mojo 5-0. Mojo 5-0.
We will make America great again.
Sam Sorbo.
Hi there, I'm Sam Sorbo for the Sam Sorbo Show. Welcome to the show. Today we're going to talk about Van Jones and the effort to delegitimize the United States of America. Oh yes, it's that big. And also, what is America? Just a few remarks on that. I'm also having Billy Hallowell on the show today. He will be my guest. He's come out with a brand new book. I think it's very pertinent to today. It's called Playing with Fire, A Modern Investigation into Demons, Exorcism, and Ghosts. I think that should be an interesting conversation. So we'll be welcoming him to the show in a little bit. But first of all, this Van Jones vodcast that he put out, where he talks about this weird, strange, unknown, heretofore never heard of workaround that exists in the Constitution that really shouldn't be there. I am so incredulous that this gentleman who is a thinker, okay? He's a pundit. I've actually met him. I met him at CPAC a couple of years ago. He's willing to engage in debate and speaking with the other side, that he's actually willing to come out in front of his constituents and admit his own ignorance to such a degree. Like, he's actually saying, I never knew this before, which is weird. And we have to make a choice here. Either he's an idiot, because the Constitution has been around long enough for him to have read it several times. And the fact that he's admitting that he never did or never took the time to try to understand it is kind of odd. And so he completely discredits himself. Or, hold on, there were two options. Either he's an idiot or he is, there's a word for it, but he's being disingenuous, right? He is feeding his base. And what's sad to me is that his base will eat this up, because that's how ignorant they are. And that is, it's funny because I stepped away from the show for a little bit. I needed a break, frankly. We had a lot going on in out my personal life. I had a lot going on that I just had to take care of. And I just needed to step away a little bit from the whole mess, because it's a mess. But it's actually very simple. There are two sides that are fighting right now. There's a good and there's an evil. And the evil side has created tremendous division. And of course, the evil side is saying, but it's the good guys. They're just being too good. Although, of course, they don't use the word good. That's my term. So Van Jones comes out and makes this statement, and he's priming his audience for outrage. He's outraged to have discovered this thing, this loophole in the Constitution, he's calling it, it boggles the mind, honestly, but he's calling it a kind of a loophole, a workaround, I think was the term that he used. And he's priming his audience to be outraged when, under due process, under the Constitution that has been our founding document since the inception of the nation, that Donald Trump might win. Now, here's the thing. I'm for Donald Trump, okay, because I'm for the side of freedom. However, I'm also for Donald Trump because I don't like cheaters. I don't like people who cheat. And I would put to you that Van Jones, by doing this, that he's not ignorant, that he's cheating. And the reason I say that is because I see that the left doesn't mind cheating. Evil doesn't mind using evil means to win. Sorry, I'm going to have a sip of my tea. So I came back and I'm doing vodcasts instead of just the podcasts, so that we can see my guests as well as hear them. And this is all new for me. So, and I welcome your comments, by the way. Although, keep it nice. Keep it civil, at least. You don't have to approve of everything I say, but keep it civil. So Van Jones comes out and he does this, and he's priming the audience. They're being stoked. WAPO came out with an article today about how the president is circumventing the Constitution. Joe Biden is picking cabinet members, and it's being reported as if he is the president-elect. He's not. He is not. Until December, when the final tally comes in, and maybe not even then. Van Jones says that the way that the process is supposed to work. Now, mind you, supposed to work only because typically that's the way it has worked in the past. Not supposed to work because that's the way it's written out that it works. There's nowhere in the Constitution that says what Van Jones is about to say to you through me. He says the way the system is supposed to work is the loser is supposed to concede. No, no. Well, even if you accept that the loser is supposed to concede, we don't have a loser yet because we have some contested ballots. And actually not just a few, but a ton of contested ballots, not just a few. But the left wants to make it as if it's a foregone conclusion. In fact, they started nearly the day after the election. They couldn't quite get in the day after the election, but very soon after that, they just declared. I think it was the day after the election. They just declared, Biden's the winner. We're done. Thank you very much. No, that's not how it works. The AP does not choose the president. The media does not choose the president. They don't decide election results. They're supposed to report. Now, we have a number of states that are misreporting the election results. So let me go into that for a minute. In Florida, we had a record number, frankly, of red voters who turned and voted for Biden, if we believe that. Personally, I'm pretty sure they got to some of the machines and they had the machines automatically switch the votes. There are reports of those machines doing that. Dominion machines actually just changing Trump votes for Biden votes or simply ignoring Trump votes and not tallying them. There are reports of that. It has been documented. And so we know that that exists. So in the state of Florida, and Florida, by the way, was a foregone conclusion. So the theory is that they wanted to change some of the votes for Trump, what would be Trump votes in the red districts. They wanted to change them for the Democrat candidate as a way of showing, see, there are a lot of people who are very disappointed with Trump and they've defected to the Democrat side, which frankly, I tell you, if you're one of those people, I got no words for you. I got no words for you. I don't know what you're smoking. I mean, that's absurd. However, what they failed to realize is the number of votes that were going to turn from Democrat to Republican. And why did they fail to realize that? Because it doesn't occur to them, because they hate. They hate so much. They can't imagine somebody voting for Trump who previously voted for Biden. But the fact is there's a big movement, the walkaway movement, walking away from the Democrat Party. And I don't know why it's called walkaway. It should be runaway. It should be flee for your lives. Because honestly, the upshot of the Democrat Party these days will result in death. And I'll get into that in just a minute. We're going to talk about what is America? What is it? Why is there patriotism? In any case, Van Jones comes out, he's priming the audience. The AP is in on it. Fox News is in on it, sadly. ABC, NBC, CBS, all the alphabets. They're all in on it. For whatever reason, they've chosen Biden. Now, who else is in on it? Apparently Pfizer. Apparently. Because I don't know if you recall, but shortly before the election, Trump was saying, we're going to have an announcement about a vaccine. We're going to have an announcement about a vaccine. The announcement about the vaccine is pending. We're going to make it. And he couldn't get the announcement in before the election. But poof, right after the election, the moment that Joe Biden was declared declared the winner by the AP, by the press, then Pfizer comes out. And I'm just guessing that Trump tried to get Pfizer to make the announcement before the election, and they refused because they're in for Biden. Then suddenly after the, and I heard Fauci apparently yesterday said, well, COVID's actually, we're done with COVID. Like, it's done now. Like, there's nothing more to think about with COVID. Because Biden's president. Somehow, there's a part of me that goes, man, if Biden were president, all of our problems would be solved. The problem with thinking that way is if Biden is president, then the radical left is in charge. Because it's not like Biden has any backbone. And he's in with the CCP. And so there's just, folks, the only reason that there is such strife and discord and issues with the election, with all of this, the reason that we are here is China. It's all China. I know that sounds like, what? China is 6,000 miles away, and that's ridiculous. No, it's all China. If you think about it, Trump built his campaign around tariffs with China, trade with China, unfair trade practices with China. He took away the TPP. He put in tariffs. And I don't know if you've noticed, there have been a lot of human trafficking arrests, busts that have gone down since Trump has become president. I mean, we've been hearing about a lot of them. Why do we have Biden? We have Biden because Biden worked a deal with the CCP, the Communist Party of China. That's why we have Biden. What the whole controversy with Hunter? And by the way, where did all the controversy with Hunter Biden go? Does it just disappeared? You know, Glenn Beck went on a rant the other day, a complete rant, and I agree with him. We have all of these people from the Clintons on down who have committed horrible acts in defiance of law. None of them are being prosecuted, much less punished for it. Things that we would go to jail for if we did, and nothing's happening. So before I go on a rant myself, let's talk about America. What is America? What is America? What is socialism? What is communism? What has socialism ever built? Let's start there. What has America built? Well, I can answer that. America, under the capitalist system, has created the greatest leap forward in prosperity for the world of any nation ever in the history of the world. So I know what America is. America, under capitalism, has created that. So contrast that with socialism. What has socialism ever created? I'm waiting. The answer is nothing. The answer is actually less than nothing. Socialism destroys. Capitalism creates. Socialism destroys. It's really very, very simple. Anybody who wants socialism seeks your destruction. And what's sad is it's a very self-serving, selfish, self-destructive agenda. Because socialism is the creed of envy. The idea behind socialism is you have so much and you need to share with other people. And I, holier than thou, I will determine how much of what you have you need to share with other people. That's all socialism is. And so it destroys because it doesn't build up other people because they're getting something for nothing they know they don't deserve. You're doing something you know you don't deserve to do. You might tap yourself on the back and you might think that you feel better doing it, but you know it's wrong because it's theft. And we all have inside of ourselves that moral compass, that idea that that personal property is personal property and it should be respected. It's part of what we call the pursuit of happiness in this nation. And so stealing from that guy to give to that guy makes you not the good guy. You say it makes you the good guy. It doesn't. It makes you the bad guy. Makes you the bad guy. Because not only are you depriving the wealthy guy with what he's worked for and what he's earned, and I know you couch it in this term that, oh, well, he didn't deserve it. He didn't really work for it. Remember, Obama said, you didn't build that. And Elizabeth Warren said, you couldn't have gotten there without the government, right? So they have this running narrative that whoever has doesn't deserve it. But then what about the guys who don't have? Why do they deserve it? Simply by virtue of them not having it? So then their poverty becomes their virtue? So you're saying to them, because you're impoverished, that makes you virtuous, and now you get things. Well, that's untenable, because the moment that they get things, they have to give them up, because then they have stuff that they have to give up, because otherwise they wouldn't be virtuous anymore. It's a completely untenable equation, and yet we have suckered in all of our students, all of our school students into this. Please, folks, please, please, please do not put your children in public schools. Get my book. Read my book. And then think about how much you love your kids. And don't enslave them with this brutal and frankly, self-limiting ideology. Socialism. Which, frankly, is just a path to communism. That's all socialism is. What's amazing is the people who are in power, the elites, they think that somehow they'll remain in power. Have they not read history? The history of the USSR is quite astonishing in the idea that the greatest revolutionaries were then killed by the revolution. Same thing in France, by the way, which was by and large a socialist revolution, the French Revolution. And the guy who came up with the whole schema for the French Revolution eventually was guillotined. That was lovely. So let's talk about Venezuela. Glenn went into this, and I love this timeline. And I think it really drives home the point. Venezuela was the richest nation, the third richest nation in the hemisphere. The third richest nation in the hemisphere in 1992. The third richest nation in the hemisphere. And then they elected a socialist for president. He campaigned on equality. He campaigned on wealth distribution. He campaigned on fairness. He was going to make things fair for the little guys. So the little guys, and there's an enslavement there that you elect someone who will save you. From what? From yourself, from your own laziness, from your own inability. Oh no, I'm oppressed. I can't do anything for myself. What a self-limiting. I mean, that's what's amazing about America, is we turned that on its head. Not only can you do for yourself, but we believe that you can. We believe in you. We invest in you. You're a citizen of this nation. You can, and we want you to. And we don't care about the color of your skin, and we don't care about your gender. Yeah, okay, we've worked through some of that, yes. But we've worked through it. So that we've gotten to the point where the first black president of the United States can lecture us on how racist we are. I'd say we worked all the way through that back to the beginning almost, right? Have you noticed that racism is rearing its ugly head again in the United States of America? So 2001, they elected a socialist president. And then in 2004, they adopted socialized medicine. And so no private health care. None. Everyone gets the same medical treatment whatsoever. Isn't that weird? And then the people who could actually afford the medical treatment, they're paying through the nose because they have to go on the black market. And then in 2007, higher education became free. Well, why not? Why not everything for free? Why should you have to pay? for anything. I mean, I think that's sort of the theory behind it all. And then in 2009, they outlawed gun ownership. No more guns. Boy, I hope, I can't wait to see them try that here. No more guns. I don't think that's going to go over very well. And in fact, I think that's what's preventing China from trying to actually just outright invade this nation. But they're doing a damn fine job of intellectual warfare in this country, because we're about to elect our Manchurian candidate. And Manchurian in the Chinese guise of the term. You know, in 2012, Bernie Sanders praised Venezuela and said what a fine job they were doing going into full-on socialism with a dictatorship, I might add. Sanders loves that stuff. He likes the breadlines. He thinks the breadlines show the vivacity of the economy or something. He's such a fool. And people love him and they follow him. He's such an angry fool. And then in 2014, they started imprisoning all their opposition. They were doing it before, but in 2014, they really ramped it up. They wanted to make sure that there were no opposing views, which is something that people like Van Jones would love. Why? Why do people always seek to shut down any opposing views? The reason for that is because they have built their case on lies. And any opposing view might bring in the truth, and they can't withstand the truth. And then in 2016, we started to hear about their food shortages. No more toilet paper, but more importantly, no more food. They were running out of food. The stray dogs were getting slaughtered and eaten. And then in 2017, they just willy-nilly, they did away with elections and the Constitution in general. They just said, you know what, that's an outdated document. We don't need that. And in 2019, we started to hear the reports of citizens being murdered by their government, because that kind of government has no respect for human life, which is why I worked on this film called Leaders for Life. And you can go see it at leadersforlifefilm.com. And it makes the case that we have to start valuing life if we want to save this nation. Because you can't save a nation that doesn't value life, because a nation is made up of its citizens. And the socialist mantra does not value life. Socialism sees you as a cog in its wheel. And if you become irrelevant, if they decide that you're irrelevant, they just replace you with another cog. You're a number. You're a statistic. You're barely that. In fact, what we're seeing is statistics don't even matter. They'll change the statistics to suit their narrative, which is what they're doing with the election, frankly, and Joe Biden. They have so many examples now of ballot tampering. I've got the postal employee now. I don't know if you guys saw the interview with the postal employee and the postal IG coming down, and it was so nefarious the way that he couched the whole interview. Now, listen, we're just going to walk through this. This might sound insulting to you, and I'm sorry for that, but I'll apologize later. But I just want to, you know, make sure that your story can't be destroyed after you leave this room. And so what he did was he attempted to destroy the story in the room and dissuade the postal employee from coming clean. And now the Washington Post has come out with a story about him and how he's recanted his story. He has not recanted his story. And he's saying to the Washington Post, I hope you're going to recant the story when you learn the truth that I'm not recanting my story, etc. There's going to be a lot of nastiness that comes down. And so I want to point out that I'm trying to get my guest here. I want to point out that we're in for a rough ride, because fully half the nation is completely brainwashed now that Joe Biden is the president already. They're not even waiting until the swearing in. They're basically saying Trump's defunct now because we elected another president. There's no lame duck anything. We just need to get to January 21st and then everything will be resolved. No more COVID, no more problems, nothing, which of course is ridiculous. Okay, I'm going to invite my guest in. How do I do this? Here we go. We're going to admit. And joining me now is Billy Halliwell, who is the author of a brand new book. And Billy, I don't see you. Did you not realize that this is on video?
There you go.
There he is. Playing with Fire is the name of the book, A Modern Investigation into Demons, Exorcism, and Ghosts. Are you kidding me? And for such a time as this, right?
Oh, yeah. It's a heavy topic, right, Sam? I mean, it's I have to tell you, I almost didn't write it. I mean, I didn't want to write it, but you know, I feel like when God puts something in your path and you pray about it and you feel like, okay, this is an important subject for us to dive into, I moved forward with it. And it was really one of the most peaceful processes I've ever had in my life. So it was pretty cool.
So talk to us a little bit about that. Why didn't you want to write it? I mean, you felt like you needed to write it. What was your reservation about writing it?
So I had been given an offer a couple of years ago to do the book, and I had brought it up kind of flippantly, you know, and I think I was in a time in my life where I was sort of chasing my own sort of, you know, I want to write a book. I want to do a book that makes a splash. And I prayed about it at the time and I didn't feel right about it. And I felt like I wasn't in a good headspace. I wasn't in a good place with my faith. And I think it's the kind of book you need to be in a good place to be diving into this topic. It's a heavy, dark subject. And so I walked away from it, and Thomas Nelson came back a couple of years later, and it was brought up in a conversation. They made an offer without a book proposal, essentially. I had like a 1.5 page proposal. It was very strange how it happened. And it was almost like, you need to do this, right? Now is the time, you need to do it. And so I sat on the contract for 2 months and I prayed. I prayed hard about this topic, and I just felt a peace about it. And so I went into it, and I'm not going to lie, part of me was also afraid because I didn't realize, and I don't know why, I'm a lifelong Christian, but that we have authority over this stuff. We don't need to be afraid of this. But yet I still had this kind of fear about what's going to happen. Is my house going to, you know, am I going to have issues in my home if I start diving into this, which is silly. And so I walked away with a lot of peace, but really it was prayer and God sort of guiding me toward this project.
So 2 Timothy 1:7, God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of love and a sound mind.
Yeah. I'm the worst with memorizing verses, by the way. I summarize them in my own words usually, but that one, I love the sound mind part.
Yeah, and sound mind is actually one of those disputed terms. So different translations will have different things of self-discipline or something like that is one of the translations. And so, and I was looking it up just the other day, so I got a little bit hitched up on the words. But we should be at peace with these things. And yet, you know, you open the door to something demonic, you might get burned.
Well, and that's the thing. And what was so striking to me was some Christians who, in the beginning of this process, when I was writing the book and I was talking to people about it, don't write this book. You know, Satan loves glory, and he wants glory. And what I found was, okay, but I actually think Satan loves to hide and loves to sort of find ways to seep into our lives and into our culture without us realizing that it's happening. And so, yes, probably loves the glory of that. But I think one of the things, and I felt this going into it, and I feel it even more now that I have data and I've investigated it, is that a lot of churches and a lot of Christians are not talking about this issue. It's, in fact, I would say when you go through the New Testament, I don't think there's another topic that's spoken about as frequently in the New Testament and is addressed as infrequently in many churches today. And so you have the a chunk of the Christian world seeing a demon under every rock. And then you have another subset who like don't even want to talk about it. It's not something that's on the radar. And yet you look at our culture and what is happening in this country and in this world, and it is very clear that there really is this sort of deception, this confusion, this culture of death, and you can't ignore it, but yet we do too often.
Well, Billy, I mean, you know, you're talking about the culture. You know, we have a fascination with this stuff, and I'd love to know if you have the statistic, because I think it's quite high, of observant professing Christians who don't believe in the devil.
Yeah, well, it was interesting. So we went to church leaders, right? So these are people, there were about 1,200 of them, and we surveyed them through HarperCollins. And these are pastors, people who lead Sunday school. So it was all different leaders in church. And we asked a variety of questions. We asked them, do you believe that Satan is active? Do you believe that demons are active? And about 80% or a little more than 80% said yes to all of these things. So it wasn't 100%. So the statistic is probably somewhere between 5 and 10.
That's church leadership.
That's
church leadership. And I don't know that church leadership is actually active in imparting their beliefs on their congregants.
No. Well, and that's the problem, right? Because then we ask the question of the, and this is why we ask the leaders, because they're going to tell us what they believe. But then we ask them, okay, well, are pastors and churches talking about this issue enough? And over, I think it was 78% said no. They admitted that they're not. And then when we started asking about, do you have a deliverance ministry? And we can get into what that is. But essentially, are you dealing with this as a church? If somebody comes to you, are you prepared to deal with it? 17% said that they had a ministry where they could deal with this. And so what you actually have are a lot of people in our world today who are experiencing issues or, and maybe it's not a, possession's very rare, but it's spiritual oppression of some sort. And they're going to churches to try to get help. And a lot of churches don't have help to offer them. And that is when people start looking to other denominations or they start going other places where they can find that guidance, right?
Right.
So it was interesting to see that.
But they go to the Wiccan church.
Well, they go to a place, right? Whoever's going to deal with it. The only ones who systematically deal with this, you know, in terms of keeping numbers and statistics and information are the Catholics. I mean, right. The Catholic Church, the Catholic Diocese. And so many people in the Protestant world will actually go to the Catholic Church because they're feeling desperate and they want somebody who's actually going to be able to tell them something, right? Well,
I mean, people are looking for leadership, and I, you know, I'm a fairly harsh critic of the Christian church and just the Christian church in general in the United States, because it seems to have failed the culture. It stepped back from the culture back in the 1800s with the Pietism movement. And it said, you know what, we'll let the culture do the culture and we'll just do the church.
Right.
And unfortunately, it doesn't work that way, right? So
no.
So then you're talking about these people who are coming. Look, and I'll make the secular argument for the idea of demons and the idea of exorcism and ghosts, in that if you believe in love, love is a spiritual thing. Love is not a physical thing. You can't wrap your arms around it. You can't quantify it. You can't give it in the sense that you can give something concrete. It is spiritual. And so are there other spiritual things? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right? And so if the church is not going to deal with those things head on, the head of spirituality, if you will, then what are people to do?
Well, and here's the thing. So when I was writing Playing with Fire, I looked a lot at Hollywood, and this is, you know, a world you know very well, and it was fascinating.
Just research,
me.
Right?
Exactly. And I'm looking at Hollywood, and I'm trying to understand, okay, and there were pastors who said this to me, you have a situation that is so bizarre where Hollywood is talking about a topic. Now, they're not doing it the right way, but they're talking about a subject more than the church is, and it's a church subject, right? Think about October every year, September, the movies that come out.
Yes.
Constantly Conjuring. I mean, go down the line.
So you're talking about the Halloween movies. We also have all the zombie movies too. I mean,
exactly.
Zombieism has been huge.
Exactly. And these are the big, I mean, when you look at Hollywood is making billions of dollars, they're making more and more money off of this. And we have data showing that this is an area. And I actually believe it's because people love to be scared, but we also, as human beings, there are a few things that we can talk about. Okay, the human experience that goes back from the beginning of time. What are things that people have claimed to experience? Possession and ghosts. This topic is something that has been with us since the beginning of time. People in every culture claiming to have these experiences. I think innately we know there's something more, and we're at least intrigued, even atheists are, to understand these, you know, inexplicable events that happen in people's lives. And so Hollywood has seized on that, and they've created a narrative, and most of the time it's not accurate, but they're talking about it, and we're not. So if the church is not talking about these things, and so that's why I wanted to go into this topic as well, because I felt like as somebody who is a journalist, I wanted to look at it, and I'm not going to tell people what to believe. I'm going to present stories to you, which I do, some possession stories.
So you got some good possession stories, some good ghost stories?
I did. And the ghost piece was interesting, and that was the hardest part of this book, I'll tell you, because I was reluctant to go, because personally, I have never really believed that people die and remain behind. I think for me, the idea that, and this was interesting in interacting with a lot of deliverance ministers and exorcists and people who deal with this on a daily basis, everybody told me in their view, they don't believe people die and remain behind. They believe you are always connecting with a demonic entity that wants you to think it's a deceased person. And so we can get into that, but it was interesting. So like the Ouija board, for instance, when people are trying to connect or they're going to a medium, that they are being communicated with many times with this entity that wants you to think it's your dead mother, your dead aunt, your dead whoever, and that it's about building this trust that, and when you think about it, the entire premise of going to a psychic, right, or a medium is to feed into this need that we have as human beings to know something that we can't know. And it's really a placement of faith in something, right? In someone else other than God. And so that was a really interesting theory to me. And
I don't know. I mean, for Catholics, they work through an intercessor, the priest, right? So this is working through an intercessor. But at the same time, you could make that argument also, right? I'm just seeing sort of two sides of that coin. So at the same time, you could make the argument that, whoa, you're not talking to the real thing. You're talking to an intercessor who you don't need to talk to, in a sense, right?
Right, exactly.
But this idea that, do you have a personal ghost story?
I have a bunch of stories. I will tell you the day... And I've only shared this a couple times because it's kind of a strange story. And of course, I'm the person who's like, oh, there's another explanation. Like, I always want to say there's another explanation, right? Now, the day that I told you that my agent called and said, you have this book offer, and I was shocked because I hadn't gone through the whole process.
Yes.
That very day, I was at my desk in my office, which is right over near where I'm filming here. And my wife was upstairs, and my wife texts me while I'm on the phone. So my agent calls me, I'm on the phone with the agent. She texts me and she's like, hey, the weirdest thing just happened. You know, I just got this like alert from Siri. Now, we had a friend who had passed away after college. And it was somebody who had always kind of bothered me that we never really witnessed to him. You know, I kept saying, come over. We just, you know, like time gets away from you. And he had this unexpected death. He was young. Wow. And shocked by it. And it just bothered us, right? So it's been a couple years since that happened. But the text that she got was Siri going off, and she hadn't turned Siri on, saying, hey, do you really want to call so-and-so? Like, you know, when you speak into your phone. And it was his name, right? And it was so I'm on the phone, literally, and I'm seeing her text come on my computer. And it just gave me chills in the moment because I was like, that's very strange, right? And so that was one of the reasons that I sat on the book too, because I was praying about that, trying to understand, like, is this a sign that I shouldn't do it? And I think we can overthink those things. And we've talked a lot about it. And she's like, maybe I said something but what are the odds it was that name, right? So I have experienced, you know, a number of things like that and some even stranger personal stories over the years when I've dealt with this topic, which was another thing that held me back.
I think Siri herself is a demonically possessed ghost because she said some crazy things to me too.
I know it's weird, right? And so I've been hesitant to even share but it happened and we were like, this is strange, right? I mean, it was at the exact moment that we're
right. The timing was odd, right? And so that adds really the ghost element. Like if Siri just popped up with some random thing that was just weird, it's one thing, but that it came at this moment and you could make that connection. And so at that point I start to wonder, what connections am I missing just because the timing's a little bit off and I just don't even notice.
Right.
I think it's such an interesting take that connecting with the spirit world is connecting with the world, with the underworld, as opposed to it could be either or. And I've always felt that it's sort of an either or. And so if it seems good, then And I guess I'm a person of moderation. So it's like, well, if it seems good, if it seems like that's a nice, reassuring, grandma's going to be just fine kind of a thing, then that's a good thing.
Well, you know what's interesting, and I would actually add to that, I think the problem, and I want to clarify what I said before, with this idea of people remaining behind to haunt, is that these moments when people are trying to connect, because when you go into scripture, it's very clear, especially Old Testament, don't go to psychics, do not go to mediums, do not use, I mean, Ouija boards would fall under that. And I have a whole chapter, by the way, on the history of the Ouija board, which is wild. I was like pulling stuff up from the New York Times. I mean, it was really interesting to go into these things that people don't talk about, but
I think the New York Times takes all of its news from the Ouija board.
Probably it would explain a lot about what's going on in media in this country, but yeah, you know, so,
oh my gosh, we could do a whole show on that.
We could,
but the demonic possession of the news media today,
which actually there could be a little bit of that going on, but you know, so, but I find it interesting because it's,
have you heard Kamala laugh?
You're going to get me in trouble because I just said we're going to have to listen to this cackle for the next 4 years. And now here I'm saying it again. So,
okay. Sorry, I interrupted you.
No, I love it. It's the means through which you're trying to retrieve that. So if something just happens to you, that's one thing, right? But if you go and you're trying to connect with it, that's where it seems to be where these issues would emerge. So if I'm going to a medium or a psychic, when scripture tells you explicitly, do not do these things. And what's really, I want to point out, I think it's Acts 16. I'm forgetting the exact chapter. In Acts, when Paul is being followed around, and I miss all these stories. I don't know if you ever do this. You read scripture and it's like, oh, that's interesting. And you move on. And then you come back to it later and you're like, what in the world?
Absolutely.
This woman's following, she's a slave, following Paul around, and she's possessed. She's got spirits in her. And she's got a spirit of fortune telling. And it tells you this. And I never thought about this. She's walking around. She's driving Paul crazy. And he finally turns around and he casts these spirits out of her after a couple of days of her following him around. But what was interesting is that her owners would use her to make money. She was a psychic. I mean, she was essentially a psychic. They would sell her abilities. And when he cast the spirits out of her, she lost the ability to do that. And that story really struck me as I was writing the book because I thought, wow, that is a whole other level. So what you're talking about, I think, are signs from God or from, you know, a deceased loved one maybe that happened. I think that's different from I'm seeking to communicate with something and I'm going to go to a conduit to do that. That's when I think you probably are tapping into something you don't want to tap into.
So, and I love that you put it that way. And I tend to completely agree with that because the idea is don't be distracted into a different world than the world that you live in, right?
Yes.
Don't become obsessed by things that are outside of this realm because you're called to this realm. That's why you're here now.
Exactly.
And there'll be time for that later, in theory.
Well, yeah, right? We're all part of that other realm. Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
And so to me, now I tell a story. This is my little ghost story. And it's not really a ghost story. It's kind of pathetic in terms of a ghost story. But I tell it in my book because it was very meaningful for me. I took my kids to the beach, and prior to that, my grandmother passed away years ago, and I used to go into her garden with her, and she would encourage me to get the tomato worms because she didn't like them eating her tomatoes, and I liked them. They're soft and smushy. They're green. They become quite large. They become about the size of my pinky. And so that was like, and that was a very strong connection that I had with my grandmother. So when I smell tomato plants, I revisit her, like I feel her, you know what I mean? Just in, you know, how sense memory, smell is a very strong, memory, stimulant. And so I had started homeschooling, and there was a homeschool mom who had brought tomato worms, and she was going to have them grow into moths. And I thought that was pretty cool. And I asked her for one because of my grandma. And I thought, okay, that's kind of cool. And of course she refused me. So the next day I happened to be right by a nursery. So I went into the nursery and I bought a tomato plant, thinking maybe the worms just spontaneously arrive on the plant. I don't know how they get the worms, right? And I brought the plant home and I watered it. And then the following week we went to the beach. And you know the beach in LA. You got ocean. You got 100 yards of beach or more of sand. Then there's a sidewalk. And then there's a huge parking lot. And another maybe sidewalk. But then PCH, which is, you know, cars going 100 miles an hour. And then you've got like the hills of the Palisades, right? While I was there, we were leaving. I took my daughter to the bathroom. On the way back from the bathroom, in the middle of the sidewalk was this little tiny thing. And I was like, what's that? And I bent down and it was a tomato worm.
Oh, wow.
At the beach.
That's wild.
Crossing the sidewalk when I was taking my daughter back from the bathroom.
What are the odds?
So to me, I just took it. I don't care.
Oh, yeah.
It's a message to me. And I'm tearing up because it was like, it just was like a nice message and I'll take it. You know what I mean?
I think God gives us that though. I think that is not at all in the realm of what we're talking about. Like those are things that I think I've had those moments too, where God gives you something, you know, it's him letting you know that person is okay. Or letting you know that that person, you know,
I had a friend who lost her mother. She had a very, very close relationship with her mother. She lost her mother. And maybe a week after or shortly after her mother passed away, and it was prolonged illness. It was a very torturous time for this woman to lose her mother in that way and everything. She got like 57 phone calls from her mother.
Oh, wow.
They just showed up as missed call, missed call, missed call, missed call.
Wow. See, it's such an interesting subject. And I think for me, one of the things I want to drive this home in light of what we're talking about, because a lot of people are like, oh, you're trying to scare people with this book. Are you trying to?
And by the way, let me just say, we're talking about playing with fire. I'm such a poor host. We're talking about Playing with Fire, a modern investigation into demons, exorcism, and ghosts with my good friend, Billy Halliwell. The book's out now, so yes. You can go get it. You can go to playingwithfirebook.com. You know, you titled it Playing with Fire, and so you're going to sort of refute that title a little bit right now, because you can play with fire and not get burned. And so tell us about that.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing, right? Because it's so funny you say that, because I was about to talk about Ephesians 6, right? And I've read Ephesians 6 a million times again, and I just breeze right past it. But when you dive into the fact that scripture is telling us that we are in a battle over good and evil, right? That this is something that is happening around us. We might not see it. We might see the results of it. And I think we're watching that happen right now. But that this is what's going on. We get very consumed with the flesh battle, right? And it's okay to argue with people, disagree with people, disagree with ideas. That's all good. But the broader issue is that there's something going on that we're not seeing. And it talks about the armor of God, the shield of faith. Well, what is that? It's being a Christian. It's living a Christian lifestyle. It's waking up, reading scripture, having a relationship with God, and in particular, a belief in Jesus that is authentic and real. That is what protects us. So when people get consumed with that fear, Ephesians 6 not only describes what's happening, but it gives us a solution to it. And so I feel like the church isn't talking about this. I think we need to. And there's a fair amount in Playing with Fire of investigation into stories. And I think that's important too. You don't have to believe the stories, but you can see the evidence and what people have said.
They're the fun part. You got to read the stories.
You got to read the stories. And there's a lot of scripture, obviously, too. But the stories, that was my favorite part. But I will tell you, some of these stories, they make you say, oh my goodness, there's just some stories that are so convincing where you have so many people on the record saying they've seen these things that how do you walk away denying it, right? And so I've heard from atheists, I've heard from a lot of people who actually are very intrigued. And I actually think this understanding of evil is really important because it points us back to our need for good. But for some skeptics, it's also going to be the thing that convinces them that Jesus is real. And that's kind of wild, right? But looking at, oh my goodness, these things that have happened, well, that must mean there is another side, right? And what does that look like? So it can be a starting point for people, I think, too.
I have a good friend who was on, I love telling this story. He was on his way home. He was a bad, bad dude. The guy is a power lifter, like he's stacked, tats everywhere. He was a bad dude. And he was on his way home. Unbeknownst to him, there was an ambush waiting for him, but he got He got waylaid by the cops and arrested. And in the back of the police car, he had an epiphany. And he realized that what he had seen in his life was pure evil, that he had come face to face with evil. And the epiphany was, well, if pure evil exists, which it does, there must be pure good.
See, that's the thing. And
he got out of the cop car. The cop brought him out of the car and literally said to him, dude, what happened to you? You seem different. And he looked at the guy and he goes, Jesus. Like it was like that. If we're going to deny that demons exist, that really is a denial of God. It just is. It's like, is there a spiritual realm? Yes. Is there good? Yes. Then there must be evil or there is no good.
Well, and look at what scripture tells. I mean, I had never looked at the attributes of Satan before. I pulled them out of the Bible, looked at them. You know, he's a liar. He wants to destroy us, right? He wants to confuse us. And I think that's really interesting, this notion of being an author of confusion. What would you say about culture right now? And I know you would agree, confusion. I mean, confusion is the word that I think identifies so much of what's happening around us. And
really, there's no reason for them to be pushing the narrative that Joe Biden won the election when the decision has not yet been made, except to cause confusion.
Well, and this is what is happening with every issue on gender. I mean, you go down the line.
On gender. Is,
I mean, how could there be a more, I mean, that is probably the most pervasive issue on issues of life. There is, if we can create confusion by changing language, and I don't even, and the crazy, I don't think people even realize that they're doing it. Some people do, but I think there's such a spiritual element to so much of this that we have to so if the church isn't talking about it, how are we going to recognize it and confront it in the world around us in a way that brings people back to truth, right? So that's my concern. And that has been, for me, one of the biggest pieces of having these conversations is saying, listen, we have personal responsibility. We have the right to make a choice in our lives. But we also have these forces. We have these things that are going on around us that are impacting us, and they're definitely impacting our.
Oh, shoot. You just dropped out. I missed that last piece. They're definitely impacting
our culture.
Our culture. That's so funny. Yeah.
Look at that.
Yeah, they demonic. Are demonic.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, and it's and that's the thing too. You want to be careful not to. We don't want to assume everything is demonic either, right? And I think so. I go into a lot of the mental health issues too in our country, and I mean, look at what's happening. We've got suicide is through the roof, opioid addiction is through the roof. There is a lot
chaos.
It's chaos that is happening right now, and I think we've got to stand up as a church and actually communicate these issues and talk to people about them. And I think people are really receptive, even on these strange issues that are hard to talk about. I think they are. They want to know inherently.
So the book is called Playing with Fire. Go to playingwithfirebook.com. And I'm just going to ask some of these questions. Where evil originates, it talks about that, what the Bible says about evil. Are there really credible cases of possession and exorcism? I want you to address that before I let you go. Are demons real and active today? We kind of covered that. If they do indeed exist, what are they? Can demons inhabit human beings? If they exist, what can be done to stop them? But most importantly, lots of good ghost stories in the book. And it's funny because I'm not really a ghost story person, but I do like the stories that bring the spirit world in not like a scary, scary way, like a tingling way.
And a healing way too. Like these people found healing in these stories, right?
Right. So
yeah.
Are there really credible cases of possession and exorcism, let's say outside the Catholic Church? Let's say that.
I would say yes. I think they're rare, but they happen. And there are a couple of cases in particular that I cover in the book that you are free to not believe them. But I interacted. I kept looking for, okay, I'm going to talk to this person, and they're going to tell me that there's some hole in this story, right? Like they're going to tell me that this person was crazy. And I didn't encounter that. I encountered people backing these stories up. And these people didn't have anything to gain by backing them up. And in fact, some of them left their jobs. Some of them were so affected by what they saw. So there are credible cases. And in fact, there are psychologists and psychiatrists in this world today who are realizing that there is much more than just the mind that they are contending with. And so I think we have to be careful, again, not to assume it's all, not to over-spiritualize everything, but yes, there are credible cases.
Yeah. And did you set up some kind of email place where people can email you their ghost stories? Come on.
So yes, actually I have. If you go to billyhollowell.com and use the contact form, and I'm actually going to be, so funny you say, I'm going to be pushing people to do that because I want to hear from people. I want to hear what they've experienced. A lot of people have been reaching out to me and they've been telling me, I'm having this happen in my house and I don't know where to go. I'm the person who wrote about it. I'm not the expert, but I've been trying to connect people to get help, right? Because that's the thing. So I want to hear stories from people. And if you've never shared your story, feel free to share it. I'm not going to share it with anybody else unless you want me to. But I think all of us have something to share on this. So head over to billyhollowell.com and contact me.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to a sequel also. So go to playingwithfirebook.com or billyhallowell.com for more information. And Billy Hallowell, thank you so much for coming on the program. I'm going to sign off now too, so thank you so much for joining me. This has been the Sam Sorbo Show. I'll see you back here next time.